You're listening to the Lean Built Podcast. I'm Jay.
And I'm Andrew. In this podcast, we discuss our manufacturing companies, lean principles,
and the freedom that we're pursuing in life and business.
So we normally record on Thursdays. This week we're recording on a Monday because I'm going to be out of the shop for a few days. Mm-hmm. And what we were talking about before I hit record was misconceptions people have about pallets.
Let's dig in. I know a thing or two about pallets.
Take some production and sprinkle some magic palletization on it, and it fixes everything, right?
Of course, of course. Just like bar-fed lathes fix all your turning problems, and
five axes with pallet pool fixes all your problems.
Robots make everything disappear. Sometimes so, profits.
Misconceptions about pallets.
Yes, go for it.
I'm asking you.
In my experience, people underestimate the durability of a 6061 T6 pallet. That's our default material. People say, I want a steel pallet. Can we do that? Of course, we could build anything, but does your operator want it? Do you want it? Because that 12 or 15 pound pallet turns into 45, 60 pounds. And so without the durability boost that you think you may need. So one of our sayings in the company is don't fix problems until they're actually problems. The spinoff on the Elon Musk quote that we drop every now and then, but for us, we had actually, I think it's Fixer Friday, either one or two, very early on building pallets for durability. And we made like literally, I think when it was done, when we finally changed the design and retired the pallets, we made over, I think, 20,000 individual uses of each pallet. And yeah, it showed its wear, that's for sure. But it wasn't like, oh, we cannot hold this anymore. It was banged up just from chips flying off of it and getting blown off and all that good stuff. But yeah, we always say, hey, if you get to the point where you're using a pallet and it's wearing out, you did a great job. You used it, just make another.
And that pallet can afford to be replaced.
Exactly. I think that's one of those things, buy it once, buy it right. Yeah. Yeah, in general, yes. But when something has a limited life, you don't want to extend the life at the expense of other factors like operator safety, the comfort stuff, to solve a problem that may or may not be a problem. Have you experienced things like that?
We actually don't palletize that much production work because we don't have that many production aluminum parts. Most of our plastic parts are large enough that they cover a whole pallet.
Yeah.
And so we're not getting a bunch of high density stuff going. What we get is quick interchangeability. We use pallets for SMED. We use pallets not for maximizing density.
Yeah.
But the idea that you're overbuilding a thing that may, we see this all the time in the gun world, is guys spending tons of money on top of the line accessories. This scope won't lose zero if you drop it out of a helicopter. And it's like, yeah, but you're a hobbyist who shoots one weekend a month. It's right. Fine. It's fine to buy nice stuff. There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah.
But it isn't the case that everything needs to be bomb-proof. A lot of things are just replaceable.
Yeah.
And what I have found sometimes, and I tell my employees to not worry about this, but I think about it, is when we make an improvement, especially if we've sunk a bunch of time and energy and money into it, almost always within the first week or two of using it, you'll realize things you left on the table that you wish you'd done differently. And sometimes you can quickly loop back and recapture some of those. And sometimes you can't. Sometimes you go, oh, we would have to reinvent this. The entire thing needs to be reoriented 90 degrees to make the operator accessing these clamps easier when they're loading and unloading. Or the way you pick this up and set it down, you always have to turn it once.
Right.
All those little things.
Yeah.
And the sunk cost of having overbuilt them before you proved them is, it's tempting. It's always tempting. The same way that producing extra of something when you've got a machine set up and it's just running the parts beautifully, you're like, yeah, you know what? Just throw like an extra 40 on there. Let's just make a few. We won't tell anybody.
Right.
A little bit of whip, a little bit of excess inventory. We're just going to tuck it away and it's going to be so nice next time that gets ordered. We'll just have some ready to go.
Yeah.
And that little voice, like that little production devil on your shoulder, that's like,
yeah,
just run some extra stock.
So we
it's
call
never
that,
good.
We call that bonus stock. So we make it less nefarious, but we go, we could, and we have rules. Oh, you know what? I remember texting you our rules maybe 2 years ago. What are your parameters for bonus stock? And it's documented. It's in our stuff.
Let's see if I can recall. The rules for bonus stock was it can't tie up a significant amount of space. Mm-hmm. It can't tie up a significant amount of money. So that's you're not going to run tons of really expensive bulky stock. It cannot delay any other production jobs that are scheduled. You won't postpone anything else on the calendar in order to make room to overrun bonus stock. Mm-hmm. And it has to be, I forget if this is a requirement, but it makes sense. It has to be an internal part that has a stable design.
We call that a legacy component. Yes.
Yes. It has to not be at risk of obsolescence due to an update.
That's amazing. Yeah. There's six rules. So you said most of them. Making it does not cause another component to wait because you don't want to create more waste. One of the eight ways. Must be produced with material on hand. You don't get to order extra.
In.
Yeah. No, just run it out. Oh, we have an extra bar. I don't know why we miscalculated, but yeah, we can use it. What we just said, legacy component. It needs to be small, like our PPS bases, our MPS bases. We never get to do bonus stock on those. It needs to be like small, like palm of the hand or dozens in the palm of your hand. Oh, and it can pause at any stage of production, but it needs to be tagged and documented. So it does not get to tie up a machine. Oh, of course, the first bonus stock part must have a first article inspection before continue. And I think we added that later. So you just want to stay on it. And it's like, if a machine's going to sit, you have material, it's running well, bonus stock, but it needs to fit all that stuff. And that's worked well for us for years.
What I really like about that process is it's making decisions in advance.
That's right. That's right.
And there is no substitute. I think I've been thinking a lot this past week about decision fatigue. I remember John and John talking about it a bunch and Sandra saying, look, I only have so many good decisions in me per day.
Yeah.
And this being tax season and we're getting new machines online, there's all this stuff going on. I feel like I have tons of extra decisions. We've had to play some musical chairs with vendors recently and drop some vendors and find new vendors for other stuff and get a backup vendor for this or that component because the person we ordered from before doesn't have it in stock. And there's just been a bunch of decisions and all of them are relatively lightweight decisions. None of them are existential, but the sum total of a few dozen extra decisions a day just puts me on the floor under my desk. I'm just like, absolutely, at the end of the day.
Yeah, that is one of the most, I wouldn't say underestimated, just there's a lower awareness about the fatigue behind decision-making. And there's a great interview, and I know I've heard him say this in a few times, but Jeff Bezos did a podcast with Lex Fridman.
Yes.
In about the last year. It was so good. One of the things I've heard Bezos say in the past is that he prioritizes sleep. He wants to get good sleep. I think Lex asked him, what does your morning routine look like? And he said something along the lines of, I putt around, meaning he doesn't hop out of bed, run, hair on fire. And he said, in maybe not this interview, but in a previous interview, I need to make 2 to 3 high quality decisions per day. And that is my job. And yeah, when you're doing a lot of stuff like Amazon, they've done a lot. Man, 2 to 3 high-end decisions per day for an Amazon CEO, that's a lot. When you look at like a guy like Warren Buffett that makes a stock trading decision, maybe 2 or 3 per year, something like, I don't know if that's true or false, but I know that he's waited a long time to buy or sell, that type of thing. Yeah, you want to be prepared for those high-end, high-impact decisions. Absolutely.
That was interesting. So I like some of Lex Fridman's stuff. I find him a little hard to listen to because he's kind of like a robot with a face.
Very much. I think that's a stick though. You know,
he's a man in black. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got the suit and the narrow tie.
Yeah.
But the kinds of decisions that we can make in advance are simple ones a lot of times.
Right.
If this, then this. A lot of if, then decisions. Mm-hmm. If the price goes up to a certain point, I will start looking for a different vendor for this. If the lead time is longer than this, I will find a different vendor for this. Mm-hmm. If this, then this. Mm-hmm. And I don't have a great way for capturing all those decisions for myself. I was just thinking today about getting a digital whiteboard because I was talking to myself over the weekend, like, do I just need a giant plotter printer at my shop? Mm-hmm. Would it be a benefit to me to be able to conceptualize something as a large on the wall thing?
Yeah.
and then just print it out full size and just stick it on the wall. And I wonder how much I would use that capability if I had it, because I generally like whiteboards, but the problem I have with whiteboards is I have to then capture all that information some way before I can move on.
Mm-hmm.
And it isn't possible to change gears and then revert to what I had before.
Let's dig into this, because I've actually put a lot of thought to this. I have some solutions, but let me ask you this. What would you be doing with that whiteboard or that plotter? What kind of stuff and how would it be used?
So some things I would put on there would be staffing gaps in the company. Where do I feel our team is strong? Where do I feel our team is weak? Where are there particular areas where I feel that I'm having to do too much low-level work that I should be onboarding somebody for and providing training resources around? And that can be because I don't have a person there, or because we don't have the resources, or because I've never really clearly conceptualized that as being a complete role yet. A lot of the roles in our current company weren't mature roles that could sustain a full-time position 2 years ago, but they have become. There's been enough demand for a person in this or that seat that now we have a seat to put that person in.
Yeah.
And so being able to quickly, like I've used Lucid App and a few other kinds of flow chart kinds of things to create a model of the company and drag things around and say, okay, is there a seat for this responsibility? And if so, do I have anybody I can put there? Is there somebody who can cover it part-time? Is there somebody that I need to bring in for that? But I actually really like doing that manually. I like writing it out on a whiteboard. I like being able to draw arrows and slap post-it notes up. I like the physical nature of that. It helps me think. I find I work on a small laptop. I work on a 13-inch MacBook Air. That's been my main laptop for years. And it's great. It's lightweight. It's efficient. I can throw it in my backpack. I can carry it around. It doesn't irritate me. I used to have a much bigger MacBook Pro, and it was a chore to take it places. I noticed the bulk and the weight. But almost anything that I want to look at that's extensive or expansive in some way, I either have to zoom it out so far that I can no longer interact easily with the details.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or I'm constantly scrolling left, right, up, down, and I feel like I'm looking at my life through a paper towel tube.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, and the Pearson boards, like we talked last time.
It's just like that. The ability to brainstorm in a large enough format to do at a glance grouping and restructuring, or I could throw up any of 25 different potential ideas for upcoming projects or products.
Yeah.
And then start grouping those and saying, okay, these ones would use underutilized fourth axis capacity on our R650. These ones would use available spindle time on our new dual spindle lathe. These ones, while they're right in our wheelhouse, they would have to compete for time on our production R450s, and then just start grouping things and moving them around. And if I really decide that this thing better belongs over there, just erase it or drag it, move it. But to be able to capture that in a digital form and put it back up at a later date and re-interact with it is really great. Because my normal way of capturing things that are on my whiteboard is I fill the entire whiteboard up and then I have to move on. I can't leave it there. And so I just take a picture of it.
Right. Okay, so every January, I take a personal retreat where I leave town for 3 to 4 days and I just lock myself in a hotel room. And 2 years ago, I brought a big whiteboard and a bunch of post-its. I just sat there and I brainstormed every responsibility in the company. And then I wrote down each employee in the company, several, like if I take Elliot, I'm going to write Elliot on 5 post-its, because for a group of different roles, like shipping and then receiving, and assembly, there's Elliot on those 3 things. And I did that for our parts. Every component we make, I just drew on the whiteboard a bunch of squares, each machine, and just started tagging it, each operation. Because you do need that deep work time to sit there and go without any distractions. And you may be working best, like I work best at night. So at 10 p.m., I'm just slapping those post-its on and then taking a picture. And then I wake up the next morning, have my coffee, and I go, oh no, that doesn't make sense. What was I thinking?
Yep.
Moving it around. But yeah, absolutely. That idea capturing, man, if you're having to interact, because we use Lucid Chart as well. If you're having to interact with some type of interface so that you can capture thoughts, you're already dividing your brain's stream.
Yeah. You're multiplying the friction.
Yeah. It's a half measure that, like I've mentioned before, one of our company principles or sayings is no half measures. It's definitely a half measure. You're dividing your brain between working with a UI and capturing like this creative energy. For us, I very much at this stage in the company in my career, entry level, you make very few decisions, but you're labor intensive. And then as you go on, you climb that ladder in your company or whatever, or you push your responsibilities on over people. The labor intensity goes down, but the decision-making goes through the roof. And for me, I'm really trying to move the company away from the hub and spoke method. That's been my push since I had more than three employees. You can't keep coming to me for all the decisions. So how do I do that? How do we climb into Jay's brain? A, it's through company principles. That's why we have a culture doc that we call it with our mission, vision, values. Then we also have like, we're putting together all these flow charts. So when a customer says, hey, can I return a product? You don't need to ask me, you flow it out. Hey, do you do this custom adapter? You don't come to Jay and say, hey, have you ever made an adapter for a DDR160? Yeah, but we can capture this and then you can flow chart it. And so that's why I was asking, because that's really powerful to get people into your, first of all, getting data out of your brain so that other people can access that data that was tribal knowledge to yourself.
Yeah. When I'm in front of a whiteboard, the main thing that I use a whiteboard for is simply unpacking my brain. Mm-hmm. I feel like my brain is like a workbench that I need to do some work at, and there's just a bunch of stuff sitting on top of it.
Yeah.
And I was organizing my garage at home last night. Over the years of living in various apartments and houses, I have a bunch of different clear bins of random hardware for shades and blinds and hanging pictures and all this stuff. And I just went through a ton of that stuff last night and just threw it away.
Yeah.
Not because we don't conceivably have space to continue storing it, but because it's so far removed from being in an active and accessible part of my brain mm-hmm. that even if I had a project that needed one of those things, it would not even occur to me to start to look for them in the places where they are.
Yeah.
Because I've pushed them down so far, they're just gone.
Yeah. It's so out of sight, out of mind that it doesn't exist.
It doesn't exist.
Yeah.
And I oftentimes, like I have lots of ideas that slowly sink beneath my consciousness. Mm-hmm. And as soon as I see them starting to vanish into the depths, I like, oh, don't want to lose that one, grab it and pull it back up to the surface mentally. And then it gradually starts to sink over the next few days or weeks. And then it comes to mind again and I pull it up to the surface and I keep having all this flotsam and jetsam of ideas yes. floating around and just getting them out of the pool and onto the deck.
Right.
So that I can get in and swim around and have a good think.
Yeah.
Is really useful.
It's fun. Okay. So one of the tools I use for that is Google Keep, keep.google.com or the app. And here, let me show you on camera. So this is my list. And each one of them, there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 color-coded pinned categories. And they're things like Jay and Wyatt, he's kind of like my integrator. Things I have to do today that I only limit that to 3 things. Finance with Ryan, the other company, which I promise I'll get to at some point. Development day. So that would be my Wednesday, my days on out of the shop list, mm-hmm. the Pearson, general Pearson to do. And there's a handful of other things that my wife and I have a shopping list. But yeah, it's one of those things I really do need to start a podcast list because I was driving here. I'm working from home today. I was driving here going, oh, what should we talk about? I know there's tons of things I've wanted to talk about over the past week. What the heck were they? I didn't capture them.
Yeah.
And now they're gone. So
I tried for a while because there is no substitute for the speed with which I can say my ideas.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But I tried using voice memos for a little while to unload my brain. And what I found was really good about it is I could just turn on a voice memo as I was driving home and dictate to myself.
Mm-hmm.
The problem is I would never, ever, ever sit down and listen back through any of it.
Okay. Interesting.
I just could not.
You did not close that loop.
No, it was an open loop. So my current go-to is I have a lot of these little single-use pads.
Yeah.
And I have pages and pages of single-spaced things. And this just travels with me. And I'll gradually, anytime I get beyond the balance of maybe half the things on a page being crossed off, I'll tear it out and roll some of those critical items into the last open page so that I keep recycling things through and I don't end up with 3 or 4 pages of mostly finished lists on top.
Yeah.
And that at least gives me something. And I actually carry that around the shop with me often because if I have my phone,
mm-hmm.
my phone is a black hole. And I don't have Facebook or Instagram. I don't have any social media on my phone. I don't have YouTube on my phone, but I have Slack on my phone for company intercompany coordination stuff. I've got Freshdesk for our customer service tickets. Mm-hmm. I've got the Signal app. I've got mail. I've got messages. And I've got Asana that we use internally to track to-dos. Mm-hmm. And just between those handful of super unexciting productivity-oriented apps, I can still get pinballed around.
You'll get distracted, sure.
And just lose my momentum.
Yep.
And so having a physical artifact, a paper thing that I can just skim through. I've read and reread David Allen's Getting Things Done. Mm-hmm. And I've still never yet successfully created an effective inbox.
Yeah. He calls that like the your bucket or your safe. It's the consistent thing. Like you don't vary from it. Like if you're going to do pad, you have to stick with pad. If you're going to do keep, you got to stick with it. A trusted, trusted capture point. I can't remember the terminology, but
he calls it an inbox. It's the place where you hub everything through. Everything gets captured and then funnels out from there so that you have a single point of entry for all that information. And you're never deciding, where do I put this? Do I leave myself a post-it note on the wall? Should I write something on Ben's whiteboard so he remembers and he reminds me? Do I set a reminder on my phone? Like it just gets to be crazy making because I've got all these open loops and they're all in different places.
Yeah.
And then I end up checking again and again, like, hey, are there any open loops in this closet? Any open loops into this cupboard? Any open loops in this drawer? Any open loops over here? How about over there? Mm-hmm. And then it just, every single bit of that burns up energy and creativity.
So years ago, so from 2014 to about 2020, I would make these custom paper spiral bound booklets.
You sent me one. Yeah.
Did I send you one? Okay. Yes. Yeah, good. And I showed one off in my speech at the 2018 IMTS at MHub, was it?
M-Hub.
Yeah. And where it was just like, hey, the first section, top section, you just capture it. And then second, you assign it around. Or and you assign it not by moving it, but you go, okay, this is operations, little O. This is, there was an S because I did shipping back then. A for assembly. Oh, what do I have to do? Oh, that order's coming in. I need to assemble a bunch of PPSs, I need to do assemble PPS bases. And it was really good until those responsibilities went to different roles in the company with people where that was their core focus, but very, very effective. Like that is one of the things that dramatically lowered my stress level. And that's straight out of David Allen's book. It's that if you can get things out of your head, you will carry less stress because we're not designed to carry lists. And to that fact, when we try to keep lists in our head, we forget them. That's a point of personal disappointment, personal stress. We don't want to be doing those things. Get it out of your head. Don't even worry about categorizing it. Now, like with my Google Keep, I have 8 different categories, but it's really easy for me to go, oh, this is about finance. That goes with Ryan. And we just jot it down. We meet every Tuesday, that type of thing.
Yep.
But no, don't even begin to organize it. I love that people use Vue, like pads of paper. Just get it out. Get it. You'll figure it out later. You can cross it out. You can reassign it. You can delegate it. Just get it out of your head, though. That's the biggest win.
And even when I'm working on my laptop, if I'm trying to work on something and some other unrelated thing comes up, the David Allen rule is if it takes less than 2 minutes, just do it right now.
Yep.
But you can get an endless supply of 2-minute tasks bubbling up when you're trying to really focus and finish something up. I really need to finish up this document to give to my CPA for our tax returns. You wouldn't believe the number of 2-minute ideas.
Oh, sure.
Oh, read it. Read the entire Encyclopedia Britannica. I could do that in 2 minutes. Let's go do that instead of this.
Sure.
Anything.
Yeah.
Anything can come up and plausibly be a 2-minute task if I desperately don't want to do the thing that's right in front of me. Which leads to my next question.
Mm-hmm.
As a business owner, how does your company handle financial payments like taxes, sales tax? Are you the one who handles that? Or do you have a CPA or bookkeeper who does that for you, like makes quarterly estimated tax payments and things?
Yeah, it depends on the type of tax. Sales tax is already done by our e-commerce site. And we use Avalara, I believe.
Okay.
And that pays the tax to the different state agencies, things like that. If it's quarterly, those are vouchers issued by our CPA, which I just put on the calendar, make the quarterly payments. Most of that I just put squarely on the plate of my director of finance, and he's got a rolling calendar. And like, for example, we need to renew our insurance. And so I'll just say, hey, Ryan, this is, you know, he's coming in on Tuesday. Our agent is coming Tuesday. I feel like I should be there because it's a once a year high level decision thing, but really I'm probably going to watch you guys talk. But due diligence says I'm just there. If I need to step out, I'm going to step out. That type of thing. Like, what are some of the things you're referencing? What do you
talking about? So for me, like, we have property taxes due twice a year. We've got to make sure that our sales tax, we use TaxJar on our website. We just started doing that in 2024. Last year, we were calculating it manually with spreadsheets, which was doable, but not great. Use tax is another one that I want to start tracking and paying more frequently. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of tax-related things that take up an oversized amount of looming, ominous space in the back of my mind.
Sure.
And this idea that, okay, I'm legally responsible. I'm the business owner. My name's on the LLC. I cut the checks.
Yeah.
I need to make sure I have intimate, detailed knowledge of everything happening here.
Yeah.
And the reality is I just don't bring any value to it. Mm-hmm. I bring zero value at all other than being the person who has it on my calendar and make sure that a payment gets sent. Mm-hmm. But there's nothing about that.
Okay.
That needs me to do it.
Yeah.
I just haven't figured out how to even go about delegating that. So I was having a talk this week. It's like, hey, should I just ask my CPA to make those estimated payments on our behalf? Like, they have the access to transact that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Should I just say, hey guys, I want you to just do this?
Yeah. Okay. So what we do, okay, let's get really granular for a second here. So once a year, we have to get a temporary EPA wastewater disposal permit when they pump out all the tramp oil that we've collected and old coolant, you know, and we keep it in this giant 270 gallon tote. When you get that temporary EPA permit, first of all, you're interacting with a government website, which is never a good experience. Second thing is, it's once a year. So why would you keep that crazy amount of knowledge in your head? So what I do is we use Camtasia, just screen capture software that has got a built-in average editor, good enough. And so I'll just step through it. And then I've delegated that to other guys like, hey, trim out the fat, just make it step through. And myself personally, I personally reference that type of thing. Like, when now we have to pay sales tax in California, like every month, we used to be quarterly, and every 3 months, I don't want to remember. Yeah, so I would it's a terrible use of brain power. So I would just have it playing this video that I did for the Board of Equalization here in California on my right-hand monitor. On the left-hand monitor, I'm stepping through. If I had a pedal that I could wire to the video to start and stop, I would do that. I bet you can, yeah. And then you just step through it, and I'm just going, okay. And I have my website, or the BOE website. I have my Excel spreadsheet that does all the calculations, and then I have the video, those three windows, and I just do it. And so then I feel like it's just, I'm doing the type of work that's really like a $20 an hour bookkeeper could do.
Yeah.
It's so fast. It's also private information. So maybe I do just want to be the one to do that. But to not have to figure it out, like not take a 5 minute task and turn it into a 45 minute task that I'm dreading. Therefore, it will be put off until
the 30th day. And then take 2 hours because I can't remember it. And then I'm digging into my email and all that shenanigans.
Yeah. So I think that's probably a better answer to how you do that. Yeah. You should keep doing it. Don't let the pain or the perceived pain of this minor thing offload it to someone else. The only time I would offload it is to someone else, in air quotes, is if it is a system. For example, whatever your tax system is, it should do that. Avalara, it's thousands of dollars per year. It's worth every penny. I have a friend in my business owners group that, what was the scenario? Somehow there was some type of government form that was either skipped or sent in a few days late or something. And the penalties were, they've got hundreds of employees. But I feel like the penalties were in the $9,000 range because of a form arrived late and 200 employees penalty on each one of them. And I just go, man, if they were using our $150 an hour Gusto platform, Gusto would have filed it. That's what they do best. You would have avoided that $9,000. That's when I would put it on to a different system where it's an integrated third party.
Yeah, certainly just telling somebody else, hey, remember to do all these things, wouldn't actually give me the peace of mind that I want, because I would just be offloading it from my slightly compulsive and ultimately responsible memory to somebody else's less compulsive and less responsible memory.
Yes. Yeah. Let me actually, I just reminded something. I'm going to literally do what we're talking about and put it on this list because it needs to get done, which is, okay, so PCI compliance, mm-hmm. when you have an e-commerce site, have you ever mm-hmm. had to deal with that?
Yeah, I'm writing a note down myself right now.
Because I just got that and we have a video and that goes to the top of the list tomorrow when I meet with Wyatt. So that right there. So that was something that I would have done, but it's so easy because I've created the video. It just needs to be edited and then Wyatt is going to go through it and renew our PCI compliance. So yeah.
I actually had on my list was develop a financial reports SOP for myself.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm shooting for with that is a little different from what we were just talking about with taxes, but it's just like a sort of like a pre-flight checklist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, at the end of each month or at the beginning of each month, doesn't really matter when, but approximately once a month, I want to have a checklist of all the things I need to just quickly skim through.
Mm-hmm.
Because sitting down and remembering, like, what are all the financial reports that I should look at and which numbers on those are important? And if I have any questions, who's the person to ask about them and which software talks to which software to generate this number or that number?
Yeah.
That just turns into a, nah, I'll do that later. Oh, look, it's December 30th.
Right. Yep. Very common.
And so giving myself a minimal practical checklist of this is what I'm looking for in QuickBooks. This is what I'm looking for with the company credit cards. This is what I'm looking for with our bank accounts, savings accounts. This is what I'm checking on our loans. This is what I'm checking on our mortgage, and just have it be a thing where I can sit down in 10 minutes and bang through each of these things and go, is that what I expect? Yes. Move on. Is that what I expect? No. Send an email to so-and-so and find out, hey, why is that number not what I expected?
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever. It would be so empowering to make those decisions in advance. Mm-hmm. What am I going to look at? What am I going to care about? And then what am I going to do if I see something I need to address?
Yeah.
And it's just, there's so many things like that.
Oh, sure. Yeah. For example, you know, I've had this discussion over the years with different employees, but in the discussion of, first of all, in the realm of KPIs, key performance indicators, what kind of KPIs do we track? What do we care about? Which actually indicate the health of the business or dictate the direction of the business? And I'm convinced if there's a KPI that does not trigger an action, if two thresholds are met, it shouldn't be a KPI. It's really like a Kanban card. Like, I could care less how many units of a component we have, but I do care when we hit 50 at the low end. And I do care if we hit 501 spitting out of the Doosan lathe, because that is that we hit the max 500. Those trigger actions. And those are the things that are scalable in business. Coming to ask Jay or Andrew, hey, how many of these should we make? That's misused brain power. That's literally waste number 8, which a Kanban card, which has a form of a KPI or a key decision indicator, KDI, it tells you, you either need to start making them or you need to stop making them. One of those two things.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Jay, that's given me a lot to think about. I need to work on that financial SOP list for myself tonight.
I love it.
And I will check in with you next week on how that's going and whether or not it got me any peace of mind.
Mm-hmm.
Because normally what happens is at the end of the year, I'm in a frenzy.
Yeah.
Finishing up all the financials, making sure everything maths out, the CPA mm-hmm. has what he needs, that we make our estimated payments for everything, mm-hmm. whatever. And then in January, February, I just ignore it all. I'm like, yeah. Okay, that's done. I'm not on the hook for that for another year.
Sure.
And then in March, mid-March, right about now, I start feeling the pressure. Man, okay, business taxes are due. I got to review a bunch of forms. I got to finish figuring out the last of our R&D calculations for R&D tax credits for things we did in mm-hmm. previous year. And then we get through April and then I just sort of relax again. Like, all right, that's done. Don't think about this for the next 5 months. And it's just this, it's this boom and bust cycle where it's high anxiety and then total ignoring of it.
Yeah.
And then high anxiety and then totally ignoring them.
Right.
Out of sight, out of mind.
Yeah.
But it's never really, it's out of sight. I can stuff it down out of sight as far as I want, but it's never fully out of mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get it. Those are the pains of growth and the pains of The tricky thing is there's all these little tasks that just need to be happened that are administrative. And you and I didn't go into business because we dreamed of tax forms and all these little permits that we have to get, things like that. For me, it's like, this is not a full-time position. It's barely even a part-time position. There's got to be a better way. And making those videos that I literally watch, I watch my own videos. I listen to myself dictating how I do it so that it's just put into practice. That's why we have QR codes all over the company. You scan it, you know how to use that tool, you know how to assemble that component or product. That's how we do it. So yeah, very powerful.
We'll let you know how it goes next week. I'm also going to be researching options for a digital whiteboard. I think a decent one of a decent size is going to be a couple thousand dollars, but it's one of those things where I've thought about it, watched a bunch of videos about it. It makes sense. It's just an extension of a type of workflow that I already use, and it gets me additional capabilities that I think would be valuable to me.
Yeah.
And so I think I'm just going to go ahead and pick one out, buy it, try it, taste the concept, see how it works.
Really quick. So one of the guys in my group has, it's kind of like a Kindle, but big. It's like an 8.5 by 11.
Okay.
And he writes notes. So you can capture as if you're writing on a whiteboard and then it goes away. I feel like it's a paperable or capturables. I don't know. I'll figure it out.
Yeah. There's a lot of
considered that.
There's a lot of portable tablet things like that.
Yeah.
What I want is something that's like whiteboard sized.
Okay.
I want something that's the size of a decent sized flat screen TV.
Yeah.
Because I have the exact same problem with putting things on a tablet, whether it's one of the ones that imitates paper and you write with a stylus, or if you're working on an iPad, is that I can only have a certain number of things pulled up at a time. There just isn't enough screen real estate for me to have a high res view of something.
I
of
see
multiple things.
Yeah. Okay.
And to be able to be brainstorming on one thing, and anytime something else comes up, I'm not putting it in some subfolder or filing it away. I'm just parking it over at the edge of the screen and saying, come back to that later.
Like, sure.
I'm not losing it. It's still in my peripheral vision.
Yeah.
I mean, I wonder if I could use my VR headset for that. Probably could. It's probably a way to do that.
By the way, I'm thinking of a thing called Remarkable. Yeah.
I've seen ads for that.
Yep.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
Hopefully the digital smart whiteboard doesn't turn out to be a fruitless quest.
I wonder if you could use a just big paper for now
Hate
to prove
it.
The concept.
Hate it. Hate it.
Why?
So those stands, which is the turnover big sheets
right.
of paper.
Yep.
What drives me crazy is you can't erase and rearrange.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Yep. And to me, that absolutely kills the entire thing.
Yeah.
I have to put, some people talk out loud to process ideas. I have some friends, I have one friend in particular, who for years we would get in arguments when we'd be talking about something. And it wasn't until we articulated back and forth to each other, hey, he puts an idea out like 20% formed. He just like dumps a bunch of parts on the table and then starts putting it together as he's talking it through.
Mm-hmm.
And I think through the whole thing and then put a complete assembly on the table. And neither one is wrong. They both work.
He's just an auditory processor.
His entire approach to having an idea and starting to say it out loud before he's even finished forming the thought meant that oftentimes I'm like, that's not a whole idea. He's like, well, I know it's not, but I have to. He would often put out a really bold, kind of audacious idea.
Yeah.
And I'd immediately push back and say, that doesn't make sense, or that's not a good idea, or that's dumb.
Mm-hmm.
And realizing that he wasn't trying to state the minimum viable product in one sentence on the first go. He's just unloading ideas. I want to be able to unload ideas out of my brain to make room for other ideas, but not have to immediately put them in some kind of file or folder system or hide them off screen or swipe left or swipe right to a different app and save something. I just want to be able to capture it.
Yeah, hey,
and paper...
It makes sense. You don't really use Signal too extensively, right? Just with me.
Just for messaging inside internally in Teams.
Okay, because one app that I use often in Signal, there is a note to self that I pin to the top, and I'm always sending myself either, well, for example, today I wanted to see how this assembly went, and I shot a quick video because we have to modify it. And because it is pinned and it is in an app that I use daily, if not multiple times per hour, I pinned that note to self in there. And then it shows up on all my devices.
I think that might be an Android-only function. We've talked about certain things.
Oh, yeah.
I've not seen that before.
Go to your signal screen and just search note and see if there's a chat that shows up. Oh,
there's a note to self.
There it is. And it's got a blue check. It's official.
Yeah, yeah.
There you go.
All right. I've learned a new tool and I'll try this out tonight. See how it goes.
But did you catch that? You have to pin that chat to the top or else it will become your new, I never listen to myself talk again.
Right.
Voice memo. Yeah, I have that pinned at the top.
Interesting. I actually don't have any chats pinned in Signal. None.
This is the only one I do.
Huh. Yeah.
That's it. Or else it will disappear. Hey, that's a good place to wrap. What do you think?
That is good. I'm in the middle of leaving myself a note, and then I'm going to take that conversation and I'm going to pin it. And then I should probably also pin my admin team chat because that's the single one that I spend the most time hopping into Signal to send and receive things on.
There you go. Make it easy. Yeah, great. All right, Andrew.
Pinned.
Ta-da. Love it.
Thank you, Jay. Have a great
night. Catch you next week.
Bye.